Looks like it's going to be the hottest year on record globally.
That were 30 degrees or hotter.
And that will only escalate in the coming years if we do not tackle climate change.
You're listening to the Climate Council Podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Council Podcast. I'm Alexia Boland. Australia's most popular tourist destinations are in the firing line, with intensifying climate change posing a significant threat to the nation's iconic natural wonders. The Climate Council's Icons at Risk, Climate Change Threatening Australian Tourism report shows Australia's top five natural tourist attractions could be hit by extreme heat waves, increasing temperatures, rising sea levels, coastal flooding, and catastrophic coral bleaching. Australia's iconic beaches, wilderness areas, national parks and the Great Barrier Reef are the most vulnerable hotspots, while our unique native wildlife is also at risk as climate change accelerates. The key findings also highlight that some of Australia's most popular natural destinations could become no-go zones during peak holiday periods and seasons, with the potential for extreme temperatures to reach up to 50 degrees in Sydney and Melbourne. It shows worsening climate change is placing Australia's tourism sector, the most valuable and fastest growing sector, under threat. In 2016 alone, more than 8 million international visitors arrived on our shores to see our national icons, bringing in more than $40 billion. Today's podcast features the report launch press conference interviews from climate councillor and ecologist Professor Leslie Hughes and Climate Council acting CEO Dr. Martin Rice.
Okay, Professor Leslie Hughes, councillor with the Climate Council of Australia. We've launched a report today about the risks posed to the Australian tourist industry from climate change. The Australian tourist industry is an incredibly valuable industry. It's second only to iron ore in terms of the dollars it earns. It employs over 5% of the Australian workforce. And last year we had 8 million visitors and it generated $40 billion into the economy. Australia's tourism industry is largely based on our natural icons, our beaches, the Great Barrier Reef, the Red Centre, Kakadu National Park, the Snowy Mountains, our bushland and our unique wildlife. And all of these icons are at risk from climate change and we are seeing the impacts of climate change on all of them already. So what this report does is that it identifies the particular risks to the particular places. So things like beaches. Beaches are our number one tourist destination. Sea level is rising at triple the rate that it was in the 1990s. This is causing coastal erosion of our beaches and is also magnifying and intensifying the impacts of storm surges. In the Great Barrier Reef, we've seen catastrophic bleaching 2 years in a row, with about half of the coral that was bleached now dead. Nobody wants to snorkel on a dead reef. Kakadu National Park, those beautiful freshwater wetlands, are being inundated as sea levels rise by salt water. Our ski industry is particularly vulnerable. Our snow cover has been declining over the last 25 years, necessitating more artificial snow to be made. But making artificial snow is expensive, it needs a lot of energy, it needs a lot of water, and you still need cold temperatures for the snow to stay around. So that's an industry that's really at risk. And then in places like the Red Centre and many other places are really seeing the impacts of rising extreme heat. So as global warming continues, everywhere is getting hotter, but inland areas like the Red Centre are increasing in heat even proportionally more.
Professor Hughes, how will climate change impact the Gold Coast?
Well, the Gold Coast is already seeing the impact of rising sea levels. Places like the Gold Coast City Council are already replenishing sand on their beaches artificially every year, and that costs a lot of money. As sea levels continue to rise, and the rate at which they're rising has about tripled since 1990, not only is there more coastal erosion, but every time we get a storm, the impacts of those storms are greater. So as time goes on, the next few decades, we'll see more and more instances of significant beach damage, and that of course has really important impacts on people visiting beaches.
What other key findings from our report actually demonstrate an issue for the Gold Coast? Is the Irukandji jellyfish an issue?
Well, many marine species, as the oceans warm, are moving further south. So we're getting tropical species coming down into subtropical areas and subtropical species going down into cool temperate areas. And it seems that the Irukandji jellyfish is no exception to that. It was previously only known from fairly northern areas, but it has been observed in recent months as far south as Hervey Bay and Fraser Island. And we know from experiments, and these are cited in our report, that the polyps, which is the early part of the life stage of the jellyfish, can survive in the conditions currently experienced in southeast Queensland. So in theory, the Irukandji could survive around the Gold Coast if it gets there.
What about on the Gold Coast? There's lots of development. In terms of the beach, there's nowhere to go.
Well, that's right. One of the characteristics of places like Surfers Paradise is that the apartments are very, very close to the beach. So in other parts of the world, as sea levels rise, there's opportunities for the beaches to sort of migrate inland. But that's not possible on the Gold Coast because there's really too much in the way.
And so what needs to be done in order to preserve or protect the Gold Coast?
Well, increasingly, Gold Coast City Council will need to be spending more and more money on that artificial beach replenishment. They also need to plan for the risks of climate change. And I have to say that most reports on tourism at both the federal, state and local government level don't really fully appreciate the risks posed by climate change. But ultimately, of course, we've got to fix the problem. And that's at all government levels, we need to be rapidly reducing our greenhouse emissions along with the rest of the world to solve the issue.
Dr. Martin Rice, Head of Research, Climate Council.
Okay, Martin, how will the proposed Adani coal mine affect the Great Barrier Reef in Queensland tourism?
There's no place for Adani. We need to drastically reduce our emissions from the burning of coal, oil and gas if we want to protect one of our most vibrant industries in Australia.
And so by having a new coal like Adani, what would that do to our emissions?
It would drastically increase our emissions, and it wouldn't go anywhere near the effort required to protect such a vibrant industry. But the solutions are available, and that's really what's exciting about the opportunities in Australia today.
And just going again from the solutions are available, what kind of solutions? Is the Queensland and federal governments doing enough in terms of their tourism plans, for example?
The federal and the Queensland tourism plans have missed the boat when it comes to protecting our natural attractions from worsening climate impacts. So there needs to be much more integrated approach to climate solutions. And with that, I mean the uptake of renewable energy, storage technologies and energy efficiency.
Should the government lead the way in anti-fossil fuel energy and reducing emissions rather than where it's currently sitting, opposite end of the spectrum?
So Australia is one of the sunniest and the windiest countries on the planet. It has huge opportunities to tackle climate change. In fact, the solutions are here now. When you look at the leadership from the states, local councils, and also the tourism operators to really uptake and ramp up by slashing pollution levels with renewable energy technologies and energy efficiency.
Dr. Rice, is it too late to protect Australian tourism from climate change?
We have to act now, all levels, from the federal government to the state government, tourist operators to individuals. But the opportunities are here now and we can solve this problem.
What kind of time frame are we talking about with all these negative impacts in tourism with climate change?
So climate impacts are happening now. So we're seeing an intensification of extreme weather events. So for example, in Sydney and elsewhere in New South Wales, we're seeing more intense, longer lasting, more frequent heat waves, and that has huge implications for health, human health. We're also seeing a worsening of the bushfire risk in New South Wales. And we're also seeing, because of climate change from the burning of coal, oil and gas, rising sea levels. That's putting our iconic beaches, whether it's Manly, Bondi, or the southern coast and northern beaches, at risk from coastal flooding and inundation.
One of the questions is, what could be the first attraction to be affected? But the truth is, they're all being affected, and we're seeing it now, aren't we?
That's right. Whether you look at the snowfields or whether you look at the Great Barrier Reef, all our natural wonders are being affected by climate change. But the solutions are here, and we need to take action.
And so, what are some of the key findings that are the most shocking to you as a scientist?
So, tourism industry is one of the largest income generators, and also huge amounts of employment. Hundreds of thousands of people are employed in the tourism industry, and yet the tourism industry is on the climate change firing line, and impacts, whether you look at the snowfields, whether you look at the Great Barrier Reef, or the beaches or natural attractions, they're already being affected by climate change.
Are policymakers doing enough to respond to reports like ours?
So when you look at the federal government's tourism plan, they've missed the boat. There's no plan to actually reduce emissions, and therefore there's no plan to protect the Australian tourism industry or the natural attractions from worsening climate change.
That's the latest from the Climate Council podcast team. You can access all of the latest Climate Council reports, fact sheets and podcasts at climatecouncil.org.au. You can also follow us at Climate Council on Twitter and /Climate Council on Facebook. Don't forget, the Climate Council is independent and community funded. We rely on community donations to fund our critical research, campaigns and projects. So please help support us with our work and donate via our website today.